Hello again. It's Anthony Harris with the podcast Looking Back, Moving Forward. I'm so happy to be with you again. This is actually my third episode in a row. I'm starting to get my routine down again and get into a consistent pattern of having episodes, recording episodes of the podcast. And I have several things I want to share with you today. And one I find somewhat, well, I find all of these things I'm going to talk about a little disturbing and sobering, and it's something that I encourage all of you to pay attention to, because there are some serious, seriously dangerous things going on in our country. And you've heard me talk about this before, how our country seems to be drifting, or some of the leaders in one party in particular seems to be drifting towards a style of government or a type of government that is so different than what we currently have. And I mean, they're drifting towards authoritarianism. They are drifting towards a dictatorship. They're really drifting towards a theocracy. And if you don't know what a theocracy is, that's where the government is run by the church, or run by a theological philosophy. Some may call it Christianity, but I think those who are pushing this theocratic Christian nationalism movement, they really are using Christian as sort of a, I think they've hijacked the term Christian, because most people who are Christian would not embrace some of the thoughts that these people have. One of the politicians, I think it was Lauren Boebert from Colorado, said, the church should run the government. The government shouldn't run the church. Well, neither one is true. The government should not run the church, and church certainly should not run the government. But we have this movement going on, and it's happening at the local level, the state level, and certainly at the national level, where these individuals who used to be on the fringes, who used to be on the margins, and were just ignored, and now they've become mainstream, primarily due to that network called Fox News. That's a huge megaphone for some of these conspiracy theorists, individuals who can just espouse and spew all kinds of nonsense. And again, there used to be a time when people like that were dismissed. They didn't get airtime. People, even conservatives, said, no, these are wackos. But now those wackos have become mainstream. They have become the voices of the Republican Party. They have become they have just basically hijacked the Republican Party. And they really, I think what they want to do is install a theocracy that is not just a Christian theocracy, but it has to be a certain brand of Christianity that they're interested in. And that brand of Christianity, of course, is a very conservative Christianity. People like myself, who's a Christian and a progressive, there will be no place in that theocracy for people as myself. There will be no place for people who are Jewish, who are Muslim, who are Buddhist, who are Hindu. In their world, only Christians should run the country. And that's not the way this country was founded. One of the things that the Revolutionary War was about, and people came from England to this country, to form the colonies, is that they didn't want the church telling them what to do. So now they've come full circle. Now they want this church, the Christian church, the right-wing Christian nationalists, to do that. And one of the manifestations of that movement is something we're seeing at the local level with school board elections and actions taken by school board members, particularly when it comes to books. What I call the tyrannical banning and even burning of books. And it's very disturbing, as I said, because these individuals who are shouting at school board meetings. They are threatening school board members, and they're very zealous. And many of them are funded by political organizations, I think. It's sort of a, I'm not sure if it's an organic movement. I don't know if it's a grassroots movement. It may be one of those turf movements where some organization, some right-wing organization, began to fund these local people for these school board elections, because they see that's where that's where they're going to take over. This is where they're going to ban the books. This is where they're going to indoctrinate and sway school kids and teachers and administrators, threaten them with all kinds of things, with employees threatening them with termination of their contracts and so forth. But again, the library situation is one that I find just really disturbing, how there are so-called parent groups and individuals that they're going in and saying, we don't want these books to be in the library. They're not saying, I don't want my child to read these books. They're saying, I don't want any mother or father to allow their children to read these books. And that's what it should be, because many times they talk about parental choice. What they're doing is taking away parental choice, because there are some parents who may say, I don't mind my child reading this book. I want my child to read this book. I want my child to learn more about this particular topic. But when these right-wingers go in, and they're champion of parental choice, but when in reality what they're doing is taking away the choice of parents to do this, to actually exercise choices. And I give you a very good personal example of this back when I was a school board member. And I was on the school board for 15 years and board chair for 6 of those years back in Commerce, Texas. And I remember one board meeting, we had a group of parents who objected to a couple of books that were in the high school library. These books were on the bookshelf. They were not required readings. Again, the students did not have to check out these books. The students did not have to read the books, but they were there. They had gone through the selection process on the campus, on the high school campus and the district, and these books were recognized by, they received all kinds of literary awards, and that's a testament to how well those books were written and received. At any rate, we're sitting there at the board meeting. As I walked into the board meeting, rather, one of the parents handed out excerpts from one of the books that they objected to. And as I sat down and read this selected excerpt, and of course they selected the part had the worst language in it, or language that I said, I don't think I want my kids to read this. And that's where I had to be very, very thoughtful and use my head and not just my heart in this particular situation, because I had to stop and think there. Maybe I don't want my kids reading this book, but there may be some other parents who don't mind their kids reading this. And why should I take away their choice? Why should I substitute my beliefs and my sense of what's right and wrong, substitute that for what they consider acceptable language in a book? So I went a little further with it in my thinking. I said, this is what tyrannical governments do. This is what dictatorships do. They ban books. They don't allow for freedom of thought. They want to control what people read and what they cannot read, what they can think and what they cannot think. That's not what this country should be about. I don't think that's one of the reasons this country was founded, so that they could have some fringe group of people out here telling others in the community, you can't read this. We don't want you to read this. And we're going to pass a policy and we're going to have these books removed. And the people in Commerce that I was talking to you about, they went one step further. They said, not only do we want these two books removed, but we want somebody in the library to go through and remove all books that they objected to. Now, keep in mind, they did not have a list of books that they objected to. They just said, read my mind. Use these books as example. If there's anything in the library that approaches this book, these two books, we want y'all to remove them from the library. And, of course, we decided as a board not to do that. And it was not a difficult decision for me, because there were two things that drove my decision. One is, I'm not going to take away the choice that other parents might want to exercise when they are deciding what books they want their children to read. I can do that for my wife, and I can do that for our children. That should be our choice. And the second thing was that this is not a democracy. This is not what democratic governments do. This is not how a democracy is supposed to work. Now, democracies can be you know, a little awkward. They can be not tidy all the time. They can be very difficult, and that's okay. But when people come in and just offer these very simplistic solutions to very complex problems, I think we have to be careful with that. And that's what I see happening around the country, where we see these parents and they're exerting so much influence, I think an inordinate amount of influence, and they're threatening the lives of school board members. School board members have been voted off the board because they dare decided that, again, these books should remain in the library. It's a difference in saying a book that may have some controversial language too. It's a difference in saying this is a required reading. You have to read this book, and one that is optional, that is something you can read if you want to. And you know, a lot of these parents who object to this language, they're the same parents who will sit down with their kids and watch a Netflix movie or watch some R-rated movie where there's a lot of profanity and all kinds of adult situations going on, and they don't mind their kids watching that. But when it comes to some of these books that have some language in it, you know, to me, it's a teaching moment. It's a learning opportunity to sit with your child about this book that may have some language that you wish your child didn't use. But keep in mind, those children are using that language anyway. They understand what the language is. And to talk with them and say, you know, maybe there's a different way to express that particular thought, that feeling, that sentiment. So let's use this as a teachable moment. But in the case of commerce, and this happens in most cases where these government entities try to ban books or even burn books, in commerce, what it did, it ignited a renewed interest among high schoolers in those books. So more of those kids wanted to read the books. So if their purpose in objecting to the book was to take away or to eliminate the ability of children in high school kids to read those two books, it backfired on them, because anytime you tell some kids you can't do something, or we don't want you to do something, something is taboo, guess what they're going to do? They're going to go and read it anyway. So it's one of those things they didn't think through very well. I think it was just a stunt. It was a political move, like a lot of these issues around the country with these school boards, these new school board members who have been, I think, been radicalized by the whole Stop the Steal, Tea Party, right-wing Donald Trump movement. I think, I would say not the Donald Trump movement, but the Donald Trump cult. And they see an opportunity here to almost permanently change the culture in this country to one that is very autocratic and very not very willing to look at both sides of an issue. And there's some issues that just simply don't have both sides to it. I think there was a case in Texas where a teacher asked an administrator, okay, the Holocaust, you know, they're saying we can't teach the Holocaust, but what the school board said, when you have a controversial issue, you have to show both sides. You have to teach both sides of that issue. And when it comes to the Holocaust, what's the other side? What's the good side of the Holocaust? There is none. So it's the limited thinking on the part of some of these politicians and legislators who, I don't know if it's unintended consequences, but nevertheless, they are out there with this movement. So I just ask you we've got to pay attention to what's going on at the national level, what's going on at the state level, but also look at what's going on in your own communities with these school board elections, because, you know, that's grassroots stuff. That's the very basic. I was a school board member, and again, it's didn't get paid for it. It was strictly voluntary for 15 years, but it's something that I think is a worthy calling to be a trustee, a policymaker in your school district. But be vigilant about what's going on with some of these right-wing tyrannical processes and decisions that are going on. The other thing I want to talk about is what's been in the news here just recently, and that is the Department of Justice and the FBI, they went to Mar-a-Lago and seized some documents. There was not a raid. It was not an invasion. It was, they served a legal search warrant. They served this to whoever was in charge. Apparently, Trump was up in New York, so he was not on the premises. But there was somebody who was able to receive that warrant. I believe it was one of his lawyers who was there and oversaw the whole thing. And you know, when they did this, you know, Donald Trump, what he always does, it's what he did in January 6th. He riles up his base. He begins to tell them that the FBI is the enemy and the FBI raided his home, that they were part of the deep state and all that nonsense. Of course, that got picked up by Fox News and these other right-wing organizations and individuals. And one even suggested that the FBI had planted documents in Mar-a-Lago at Trump's home. And that was something that just spread also like wildfire. I mean, Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and all these people on Fox News said, yeah, it was just like that. It was the FBI planted things in his house. It went from, did they do it? Could they have done it? To, yes, they did it. And there's no evidence of that. So what Merrick Garland did, which was very brilliant, he said, Trump, you know, you can reveal what was in that search warrant, what we came to look for. And Trump said, I don't object to it. And because he's Teflon Don, he really doesn't care about the consequences. So what Merrick Garland, in the face of all of these attacks on the FBI, where these politicians like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar and the usual cast of characters on the right, they were calling for defund the FBI. Now, keep in mind, these are the same people who were excoriating people in the Democratic Party for saying that, because some people talk about defund the police, and that's not something Joe Biden ran on. That's not something that the Democratic Party embraces. There was somebody on the left, we're talking about defund the police. And that's another discussion we can have at another time about just what does defund the police mean. Now, Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jim Jordan and even Kevin McCarthy and Mike Pence, you know, they have gone into that side of the thinking and saying that this was unjust. It was a raid. It was not justified. But what Merrick Garland, they said, okay, we will show you the receipts here. We will share with you some of what we can share with you. And here's exactly what the agents went in to find. They knew that there were some boxes of documents that Trump had no business having at his home. And these, the search warrant was about, we have probable cause to believe that there are documents in this home and part of an investigation into possible violations of certain federal laws. One of those laws was the Espionage Act. There was an ongoing investigation, so they had to go and get the documents as part of that investigation. They have not charged him with anything. They've not indicted him. He's not certainly not been convicted of anything. This is a part of a normal federal FBI Department of Justice investigation. The other thing, of course, they're investigating him about is criminal handling of government records. Criminal handling of government records. And of course, he claims that he declassified all of these documents, and his son went on Fox and, you know, he can just declassify anything he wants to at any time. Cash Patel, who used to be in Trump's administration, was on TV the other day saying that the president can just stand up over a box of documents and just utter the word declassified, and just by uttering that, those documents become declassified. But he's wrong about that. There's a process that the president has to go through to have anything declassified. And obviously, you know, the arrogance and the narcissism of this man didn't. He probably said, oh, I don't want to follow the process. You know, I just don't want to do it because I'm Donald Trump and I don't play by the rules. I'm above the law. But he got his hand slapped on that one. And the other one, the third thing that they're investigating him on is obstruction of justice, obstruction of an ongoing investigation. And we don't know what that investigation is. I'm anxious to find out, as we all are, what are they investigating him for? And people say this is unprecedented, them going in and seizing documents from the president. But Donald Trump is an unprecedented character. We've never had a president like him before. I mean, the lies and the lack of character and the crookedness and the lack of morality and all those things, we have never had a president, somebody who loves to cheat, who loves to lie, who loves to rile people up and get them to go to the Capitol and engage in insurrection. We've never had a president to do that. So naturally, you're going to have a situation where you've never had a president home to be, to have a records, to have them to go in and seize records and so forth. And then the other part that the right is trying to do is this whataboutism thing. What about Barack Obama? You know, they're going after him now. Say, Obama had 30 million pages of documents and nobody said anything to him. But what Obama did was he went through the process with the National Archives. And he did not have possession of those documents. Those documents were in the possession of the National Archives. They were sent from D.C. to Chicago, which is the location of where his presidential library is going to be. And he went through the process. He followed all the procedures. He crossed the T's and dotted the I's. And they're trying to say now, okay, Obama, why didn't y'all investigate Obama? Well, you know, Obama didn't do what Donald Trump has done. He didn't take boxes of classified information that may jeopardize the national security of this country. You know, you put all of these documents in a place that is, you have people in and out of his estate, his house all the time. And somebody smart enough can figure out, okay, here's some classified, I mean, really the highest classification that you can get in the government. These are documents that this man, who is no longer the president, he's a private citizen, he no longer should have possession of those documents. And of course, we learned the other day that they actually, the FBI, presented him with a subpoena and presented him with an opportunity to share those. They subpoenaed those documents, and he claimed he had submitted everything. Even his lawyer signed off in June saying that all of the documents related to whatever it is you're looking for have been sent to you. Well, now we know that's a lie, and that's going to create probably some legal issues for that particular lawyer who on the affidavit she lied to the FBI. She knew those documents were not, she knew those documents were still in the possession of Donald Trump, but yet she signed off saying that, no, they're not here, they're someplace else. So boy, that's going to be quite interesting. And so again, yeah, it's unprecedented. It was not a raid. It was something that needed to be done. And I just get tired of these right-wing politicians who know better. I mean, they absolutely know that you don't just go in and seize documents. There are several levels that you have to go through to get approval for this. You have to get the magistrate, as a federal magistrate in Florida, who authorized this, and the Merrick Garland approved it. So, you know, they didn't take it lightly at all. They took this very seriously, knowing that there's going to be some fallout. There's going to be some consequences from the decisions that they made. And of course, what Trump and his people did, they identified the name of the magistrate who signed the search warrant, and now this man has to get security because some of these sycophants and these enablers and these, you know, these wackos that follow part of the cult, the Trump cult, you know, they threaten the man's life. They threaten his family. They threaten his community. He's a Jewish individual, and the synagogue where he worships, they've had to take some extra precautions there because when Trump says the FBI and this judge, they are the enemy of the state. They are people who are trying to hurt me. People take that seriously. And that's evidenced by the fact that this guy in Cincinnati the other day, who was at the January 6th insurrection, took it upon himself because Donald Trump said the FBI had done something awful and terrible to him. So he goes and tries to attack the FBI in Cincinnati, and ended up losing his life for that. And you know, it's I'm not sure what part of the brain is missing on some of these people who think they can, number one, just go into the FBI office. I don't care what kind of armor you have on. You know, you just can't go and say, I'm mad because I think you did something bad to Donald Trump, and I'm just going to bring my guns in here, and I'm just going to try to shoot as many people as I can. No, that isn't going to happen. What part of your brain is not working when you believe something that silly and sadly that deadly? You know, it's when these people hear things, and that's why these politicians, you know, they have to be more responsible in the rhetoric and the words they use, because words matter. What you say and what you utter and that comes out of your mouth, it matters, because you have some people out there who believe what you are saying. When you say the FBI needs to be defunded, that the feds need to be assassinated, when you put that out there, man, you got some nutty people, some wackos out there who will do that. You think about the case with Pizzagate, where people bought, you know, they were saying that Hillary Clinton was running a child pornography ring out of a basement at a pizza place in Washington, D.C. So this guy goes in, he said, I'm here to kill these pedophiles. I'm going down to, and there is no basement. And that was the crazy thing about this, is that there is no basement in this particular pizza place. And of course, it was something that people on the right made up. And this guy was wacky enough and such an ardent supporter of Trump and his sycophants that he ended up going to jail. He may have actually lost his life over this, but it's awful. The other thing that's kind of on the horizon right now is, and we just saw this, a number of Republican primaries in Wisconsin and Arizona and some other states, and for governor, for representatives, for senator, for a number of positions. And the thing to keep in mind is that most of these individuals in the Republican primary who won were election deniers who were supported by Trump only because Trump said, I like them because they say they believe the big lie that the election was fraudulent, it was rigged, that it was stolen from him. And as long as you uttered those words, then you were safe in the Republican primary. And Carrie Lake from Arizona, you know, all of these people, Dr. Oz, you know, J.D. Vance, these people running in the Republican primary, Herschel Walker down in Georgia, bless his heart. I'll say some more about that in just a few minutes. But, you know, but they've got to, when you run to the right, they have to run as far to the right as they can in the primary. But when the general election comes and they have to not run against other Republicans, but have to run against Democrats, and Democrats can vote in the general election, obviously. And they still, most of them will still maintain that far right, right-wing radical pro-Trump philosophy and belief system. And that might, again, that might work in the primary, but when you have to come to the general election, it's not just Republicans you have to appeal to. You have to appeal to independents and maybe some Democrats. And if you're not doing that, guess what? You're probably not going to win. But because of gerrymandering, you know, some of these states, you know, some of these crazy people are going to be elected. Some of these wackos are going to go into the Congress. They're going to be state representatives. They're going to be members of Congress, and because of gerrymandering. And when the legislature can gerrymander a district and guarantees that no Democrat's going to win, so if you win the Republican nomination, you are probably going to, very likely again because of gerrymandering, you're probably going to win the election. And the other thing, the final thing I'll talk about, well, two more things I want to talk about. I said Herschel Walker. I think I've talked about him before. I just don't get the guy. When you hear him talk, and bless his heart, he has a very difficult time in expressing himself. He doesn't know what he's saying. He doesn't know what he wants to say. He hasn't thought out very well what it is he's trying to say about, you know, even it's about climate change. I think I've mentioned before how he talked about how the bad air in China decided it was going to come over here to the United States and take over our good air. I mean, what kind of nonsense is that? And he talked about evolution. And he said, you know, they say humans came from apes. And he said, well, if that's the case, why do we still have apes? The guy said he graduated in the top 1% of his graduating class at University of Georgia. He didn't even graduate. And I think had he gone there and gotten an education, he would probably have a better understanding of what evolution is all about. But you know, Raphael Warnock, I think, is widening the gap between him and Herschel Walker, but you can never tell. I think you know, Herschel is, if he becomes a senator from the state of Georgia, that's a harbinger of really some bad things happening in our country. If the Georgia voters believe that they would rather have someone who put a gun to his ex-wife's head, who has lied about his having children outside of his marriage, if that's the guy who they want to put in the office, I say, God help us, because this is going to be really, really a sign of some really, really bad things coming down the pipe. The other thing is with Liz Cheney. She is running for re-election, running for the Republican primary in Wyoming. I believe it's this coming Tuesday. And she's probably going to lose that election. And she's been elected by wide margins in the past, but we know why she is going to lose is because she dared stand up for the Constitution. She dared stand up against Donald Trump. Of course, Trump won that state by a wide, wide margin. And she is a Republican. Her father, Dick Cheney, was vice president under George W. Bush. And it's telling about the Republican Party. Here's somebody who is a staunch Republican, conservative. I mean, her voting record, she has probably voted more with Donald Trump than she has against Donald Trump in legislation and so forth. But because she had the audacity to say that, Donald Trump, you are wrong, and we're not going to let you get away with trying to overthrow this government, trying to incite people to insurrection. We're going to have this committee here, and we're going to hold you accountable for what you did. And within right-wing politics, that's a formula for losing the election. They don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to make the correction. You know, yeah, you voted for the guy in 2016. You may have voted for him in 2020. But you've had time since then to figure out this guy is deluding you, is fooling you, is trying to get you to do things you know are not right. But yet you sit there and you say, yeah, I'll vote for Donald Trump again, when you know full well that the man has been using you and doesn't care about you. He just wants you to write checks for him. He wants you to vote for him, and he wants you to continue this right-wing movement, because even after Donald Trump, and I predicted this a long time ago, even after he's out of office, his movement will continue. And I think it will continue beyond the time that he's on this earth. I think there are just enough people out there who don't like democracy. They don't like fairness. They want a theocracy. They want a Christian nationalist theocracy. They're intolerant of different points of view. They're intolerant of anything that goes against their own personal beliefs. And if this is your personal beliefs, belief to that gay people shouldn't marry, that's your decision. But don't use that belief, even if it's a religious belief, don't impose that on other people. And that's the difference in what the Republicans are doing, I think, and what the Democrats are doing. Well, I hope Liz Cheney can beat the odds. I don't think she's going to, but it would be great if she did. And what I like about what she said is that if I have to lose this election for standing up for my principles and standing up for democracy, so be it. And there are these voters in Wyoming who are okay with that. They would rather side with Trump and his tyranny than with Liz Cheney and her support for democracy. And part of it is because they just don't understand the dichotomy there between an autocracy and a democracy. And for them, and that's why it's so scary, for these people who are anti-Cheney, who are pro-Trump, you know, they don't understand how easy it is to lose this democracy, this thing that's been going on for 200 some odd years, or however long our country has been here. And it's, you know, I think we're playing with fire. And I don't think I'm overstating, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic at all when I say this election, the midterms in 2022 and the presidential election in 2024, it's going to really determine which direction our country is going to go. Are we going to head down a path of an autocracy, or are we going to stay on the path of trying to have a democracy that attends to or attempts to tend to the needs of the entire country? And whereas the theocracy is in this movement on the right, you have to be of a certain ilk. You have to be a Christian, or not just a Christian, but a certain type of Christian to have any kind of status in the society. So those are things that are just bugging me, I'll be quite honest with you. But I want to have some hope that voters go to the polls and don't let anybody convince you that your vote doesn't matter. You have to vote. I mean, you have to vote as though the democracy depends on it. And it does. Our democracy depends on whether or not you vote. And don't fall for these lies that the vote is already rigged and that your vote doesn't count. The Republicans are going to win anyway, so why should I go out and vote? No, don't buy into that. That's not a, you know, the pundits and some of these surveys, these national opinion polls, they have pretty much written off the Democratic Party in 2022 midterms, but I think there's some things going on. You look at the economy, how things are starting to get better. Inflation in July was at 0%. You know, it's still high, but it's at 0%, which is a good indication that inflation may be peaking, may have already plateaued, and it's going in the opposite direction. You had these 500,000 jobs created. You have an unemployment rate that's the lowest it's been in probably 50 years, 3.5%. And wages are up. And once we get, and gas prices are going down. So once these things start to, people begin to feel them. I know Congress just passed the Inflation Reduction Act, or the IRA. And I think that was a real, not just a win for Trump and the Democrat, I mean, for Biden and the Democrats, but it was a win for this country. It was a win for our country because seniors are going to be able to benefit from the provision that allows negotiation of drug prices, insulin capped at $35, all those things that are going to help bring down costs and bring down the price, and it's not going to increase people's taxes. And of course, the Republicans are going to tell you, oh yes, it's going to increase taxes. No, if you earn under $400,000, no, your taxes are not going to go up. What they're targeting are these multi-billion-dollar corporations that pay zero in taxes. And these are some of the most unpatriotic organizations and corporations, because they are receiving all of the benefit of what a democracy offers, but they don't help pay for it. They don't pay their fair share. So the Democrats have stepped in and say, okay, you're going to start paying at least 15% rate on the money that you earn. And of course, the Republicans cry foul because they say, oh, this is going to hurt the consumer. That's going to make all of our taxes go up. No. You know, that's their job, is to not tell the truth. It's their job is to be irate. And as soon as you begin to see some of the tangible benefits of this, the first group of people who are going to get out there and say, look what we did, are the Republicans. You know, it's like when the infrastructure bill passed, the Republicans voted against it. And then when money started flowing into these Republican communities or Republican-controlled communities, for bridges and for road improvements, the people out there cutting the ribbon, the people out there touting this as, boy, this is really going to make a difference in our community, in our state, they were Republicans, okay? But yet they said, we don't want this bill. We're not going to vote for this bill. So I think the same thing is going to happen with this IRA. We're going to see some tangible benefits that will accrue to our country, and to citizens who desperately need that assistance. And when it happens, I think some Republicans are going to try to take credit for it and say, look what we did. Okay, but we're not going to fall for that. Okay, this is not our first rodeo. We kind of understand where they're coming from. Anyway, I think I'm going to stop here. I have some more to talk about next week. But again, if you have some feedback, you have some questions, you have some comments, or even a suggestion of something that we can discuss, please let me know. One of my future podcasts will include a conversation with Deborah Keyes. I'll tell you more about her once we have this this episode, because we're going to talk about some things that we have in common about social justice and about social emotional learning and about some school board things, because she's been very active in school board work. I've been active in school board work at one point in my life. So that will be coming up at some point in the future. But that's all I want to do today. That's all I want to share with you. And if you have some comments, again, my email is aharris007@yahoo.com. aharris007@yahoo.com. Until next time, take care.